The spirit gazed upon him mildly. Its gentle touch, though it had been light and instantaneous, appeared still present to the old man's sense of feeling. He was conscious of a thousand odors floating in the air, each one connected with a thousand thoughts and hopes and joys and cares long, long forgotten. Hey everybody, Allison Pittman. Thank you for coming back for episode 3 in our series with the Dickens classic Christmas Carol and my margin notes, my thoughts and reactions and ideas that I have scribbled in the white spaces around Dickens' beautiful prose. We're in stave 2, looking at the adventures of Scrooge as he gets to skip through his life, going to these key scenes and key moments that should be really familiar to anybody who's ever seen any of the adaptations of A Christmas Carol. You know, we're going to go to the schoolhouse, we're going to go to Fezziwig's party, we're going to see this great, beautiful, romantic moment with him and Belle. But I think that if you haven't read the novella, and my thesis through all of this is you have to read the book because there's so much more. It's so rich in everything that Dickens packs into this. Maybe we'll see a few things that haven't always made their way into the film adaptations. And so you might not realize that they are there and they're totally worth spending a few minutes with. So the Spirit of Christmas Past gives Scrooge this very familiar warning. He says, "These are but shadows of things that have been," said the ghost. "They have no consciousness of us." He wants Scrooge to realize that they're going to zap themselves into these scenes, but that the people that they see and the events that are happening, they're not going to be able to interact with it. As Scrooge, his first reaction brings him actually to tears. The spirit says, "Your lip is trembling. What is that upon your cheek?" And Scrooge muttered an unusual, catching it in a voice. It was a pimple. Begged the ghost to lead him where he would. So sort of a "I'm not crying, you're crying" moment that Scrooge has with the spirit right at the beginning. But he sees all of these people. First, they're just out in the street, and it's that everybody's going around and celebrating Christmas. They are greeting and shouting out these greetings to each other. And Scrooge has a very, very physical reaction. These are all people that he knew. There are people from his past. He says, Scrooge knew and named them. And why was it that all of a sudden he finds himself? Why was he rejoiced beyond bounds to see them? Why did his cold eyes glisten? His heart leaps. He was filled with gladness when he heard them say Merry Christmas to each other. He has this physical reaction to seeing them send their greetings one by one. And he doesn't understand that because Christmas, the end of that paragraph says, what good had Christmas ever done to him? And that goes straight back to that line that he said to Fred, what has Christmas ever done to you? And in fact, throughout this visit as he visits the past, he hearkens back to very specific moments from that Christmas Eve afternoon in his office. They go to the school and the ghost says, the school is not quite deserted. A solitary child neglected by his friends is left there still. And Scrooge knew it, and he sobbed. He knows what he's going to see. He's going to see this sad little boy left all alone in this great, spacious, cavernous building. The description, there was an earthly savor in the air, a chilly bareness in the place, which associated itself somehow with too much getting up by candlelight, and not much to eat. This is what Scrooge's own home has become, something barren, something cold, something without a lot of food even in the house. You know, we always associate food with with hospitality and warmth and generosity. And this is what Scrooge grew up in, and this is what Scrooge has now created for himself. But the first version of himself that he sees, we don't often see that depicted in the films. And I think it's just adorable. There's a little boy sitting all alone by a feeble fire, okay? As Scrooge sat down upon a form and wept to see his poor, forgotten self as he used to be. So there's not a latent echo in the house, not a squeak and a scuffle from the mice beyond the paneling, not a drip from the half-thawed waterspout in the dull yard behind, not a sigh among the leafless boughs of one despondent poplar, not the idle swinging of an empty storehouse door, no, not a clicking in the fire, but fell upon the heart of Scrooge with a softening influence and gave a freer passage to his tears. It's just this solid block of cold silence. And then the spirit touches Scrooge on the arm, and Scrooge looks about at that younger self who is intent upon his reading. So that's what he's doing, this little boy who's left alone. He's reading. He's not studying. He's not doing homework. He's not working math. He's reading. And then this lovely burst of life happens. So suddenly a man in foreign garments, wonderfully real and distinct to look at, stood outside the window with an axe stuck in his belt and leading by the bridle an ass laden with wood. And Scrooge says, "Ah, it's Ali Baba." And so the characters of these stories that Scrooge used to read when he was a young boy, all of a sudden just burst into this room. He says, "Oh, it's Ali Baba. Dear old honest Ali Baba. Yes, yes, I know. One Christmas time, when yonder solitary child was left here all alone, he did come for the first time, just like that." And so now he has this bit of a happy memory almost, that he's remembering what he used to read as a child when he was here. Ali Baba, he says, there's Valentine and Orson. And I made a promise to y'all listeners that the reactions and the insights that I'm bringing up, I promise I have not researched. It's just my thoughts. But I did have to look up Orson and Valentine because I had no idea who that was. And all I did was a Google search and Wikipedia. So, but then it just makes sense. They're brothers who were left alone. They're brothers who were abandoned as infants, and they were left to like be raised in the woods or something. And so I can see where Scrooge would identify with these. I can see why Dickens would include these in all of the great fictional characters that played a part in forming Scrooge's his consciousness, because these two were abandoned. They were left alone. They were separated. And then I think like one of them came back and found the other one. And I don't know, they wrestled or something and then lived forever. But the abandonment, there's where I find the connection. And I'm moving on to things that maybe I know more about than this. He sees the parrot. He sees Robinson Crusoe. He sees his man Friday. He sees all of this so vividly. And my note here says that Scrooge's vivid imagination, maybe this is why he can so readily accept the visit of three spirits. Maybe this is why Marley kind of instinctively knew that he could tell Scrooge, hey, three spirits representing Christmas are going to come and visit you all night long, and they're going to be completely real and dimensional, and they're going to take you on these adventures. Because Scrooge's childhood, it was forged in this idea of taking fictional characters and giving them dimension and making them very, very real to him, as if they're right there in the room. So while he has this absolute joy of revisiting this moment, he also starts to cry again and dries his eyes. And when the spirit asks him why, he says, "What's the matter?" "What is the matter?" asked the spirit. "Nothing," said Scrooge, "nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night, and I should have liked to have given him something, that's all." And the ghost smiled thoughtfully and waved its hand, saying as it did so, "Let's see another Christmas." What I love about this moment is that the spirit doesn't right then judge him. The spirit doesn't say, see, you should have given something to that little boy because you were once a lost and abandoned little boy. And no, he doesn't do that. He smiles thoughtfully because the spirit's like, okay, this is working. This is where we want to go, and takes him to someplace else. Now, Scrooge's former self grew larger at the words. So we see this passing of time where he's just sitting there and he's reading, but he's growing right before his eyes. The room became a little darker and more dirty. The panels shrunk. The windows cracked. Fragments of plastic fell out of the ceiling. The naked lads were shown instead. But how all this was brought about, Scrooge knew no more than you do. He only knew that it was quite correct, that everything had happened so, and that there he was, alone again, when all the other boys had gone home for the jolly holidays. So that moment that we see him reading, it could be taken as a fluke. Oh, we happened to capture him this one time when he was sitting by the cozy fire on a cold day and reading a book. But now the narrative makes it very clear. Everybody else has gone home for the holidays. All the other boys are gone home with their families. And he's left by himself. And he was not reading now, but walking up and down despairingly. Scrooge looked at the ghost and at the mournful shaking of his head, glanced anxiously toward the door. So he's not reading anymore. He's given that up. So this one thing that might have helped him to grow and be expressive and generous, he's already abandoned that. Now, Scrooge looks towards the door because this is an event. This is a memory. He knows that this is the Christmas that Fran comes to get him. I think he looks there expectantly. And she comes home and she runs through the room and she says, I'm here to bring you home, dear brother, to bring you home, 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 home. I love that repetition. Home, home, home. When we study the writing of the Psalms and that repetition three times is an emphasis. It's like really, 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 very, very, very. So home, home, home. She's here to bring him home, little Fran, returned the boy. And yes, said the child, brimful of glee. Home for good and all. Home forever and ever. Like, he doesn't have to stay at this horrible school anymore. Father is so much kinder than he used to be, she said, that home is like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was gone to bed, and I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said, yes, you should, and sent me in a coach to bring you, and you're to be a man, said the child, opening her eyes, and are never to come back here. But first we're to be together all the Christmas long and have the merriest time in all the world. So there's no mention of a mother here, but there is mention of a cruel father, because Fran says he's so much kinder than he used to be. So we don't know that Scrooge would have been better off had he been home with this unkind father. And there's no mention of a mother at all. So we don't know if she's passed away. We don't know if she just has no real say in where her son spends his holidays, if she's just sort of cowed to this unkind father. But at any rate, there's no mother mentioned here or really any place else in the novel that I can think of. The only woman in Scrooge's life is this young sister, Fran, who's come to fetch him home. And notice she says that, she says, you're to be a man, but first we're going to be together all the Christmas long. Now, the merriest time in the world. To me, I just take from that it's not that Scrooge is being invited home to be the man of that household and be entrenched as the loving older brother and a good old father-son times to come. To me, I see that he's going to go straight into an apprenticeship somewhere. And continue on there. He's leaving school. Dad's tired of paying for schooling, and we'll be sending him to go off and live and be something else besides just a member of the family. But towards the end of this encounter, the ghost mentions about Fran. She was always a delicate creature whom a breath might have withered, said the ghost, but she had a large heart. She's this, we see him having family reaching out to him and bringing him home for Christmas. As Scrooge said, so she had, you're right. I will not gainsay it, spirit, God forbid. She died a woman, said the ghost, and I think had children. One child, Scrooge returned. So, of course, the Fran is the mother of the nephew Fred, who is trying to reach out the same way that Fran reached out here. Fran goes running in and says, Father's so much kinder. Come home for Christmas. Fred says, come to our house for Christmas. Come celebrate Christmas. But something happened in between from this boy who's so glad to be going home for Christmas to Fred, who invites him and he won't go. And I think it's this idea that Scrooge thinks that he's coming home to family, but is shuffled off again. But he shuffled off into a very nice place. He works for a Fezziwig, and that's our other scene. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time at Fezziwig's party. It's this big boisterous affair. Everybody's dancing. He says that on Christmas Eve they put shutters on the window. They close up shop early. They clear everything out for a dance. Said there were more dances and there were forfeits and more dances and there was cake. And there was a great piece of cold roast, and there was a great piece of cold boiled, and there were mince pies and plenty of beer, and people who would dance and had no notion of walking. It was a big time office party. And I love it's just this line that a positive light appeared to issue from Fezziwig's calves. They shone in every part of the dance like moons. Fezziwig has these great calves and he's out there dancing. And Scrooge realizes he's watching and he's so caught up in this moment. He remembers everything, how much he enjoyed everything. And he says, two apprentices who are pouring out their hearts in praise of Fezziwig. And when he had done so, here's Scrooge and the other and Dick, his friend, who were going on and on. And the ghost brings up to him, he has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, three or four perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise? He only spent a few bucks. It's a pretty simple party, musicians and some cakes and moving some stuff around. And Scrooge was heated by the remark and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter self. Says, it isn't that spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks and things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. And I love that he's speaking as his former, not his latter self. He's speaking of in the way of the young man that he was when this party was actually happening, not who he became afterward. That it just doesn't take that much to make somebody truly, truly happy. And of course, this brings back his clerk. He says, I would like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now. That's all. So again, he goes back to that moment, that Christmas Eve in his office with a new insight. First, we saw him wish that he could go back and give a small token to that boy who was singing Christmas carols. Now he wishes he could go back and speak to his clerk. My time grows short, observed the spirit. Quick. And this was not addressed to Scrooge or to anyone whom he could see, but it produced an immediate effect. And to me, this reinforces the fact that the ghost is a messenger with a purpose. And little by little, the ghost has seen this purpose coming to fruition. Okay, he's seeing Scrooge go back, truly go back to who he used to be and capture some of that. Again, Scrooge saw himself. He was older now, a man in the prime of life. His face had not the harsh and rigid lines of later years, but it had begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in the eye, which showed the passion that had taken root and where the shadow of the growing tree would fall. Here we see the first little root of who Scrooge would become. And we get some, you go back to that very first depiction of him, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. That's what we see in stave one. And here we see an eager, greedy, restless motion to the eye. So that's even that same verbal pattern that Dickens used to describe Scrooge initially, he uses it here. It's truncated. He only gets three little adjectives: eager, greedy, restless. But the syntax of it, the rhythm of it, pattern of it, is the same. It's just smaller here because it's just starting. And this is that heartbreaking scene with Belle. He goes to that Christmas where she says to him, you fear the world too much. They're breaking up. She's breaking up with him. And she says, you fear the world too much. All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion gain engrosses you. Have I not? So she knew him when he was, I'm putting this together, that young, carefree apprentice dancing the night away at Fezziwig's. But little by little, all of that has dropped away until he's become this person who's just consumed with greed and with possessions. And she says, our contract is an old one. You know, maybe they grew up together. Maybe they've known each other for a long time. Maybe they just looked at each other when they were so young and said, let's get married. And that was it. That was their contract. She says, our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so, until in good season we could improve our worldly fortune by our patient industry. You know, we were going to start out poor and make things better and get ahead, work hard. But she says, you were changed. And when it was made, you were another man. He says, I was a boy. He says it impatiently. He's like, don't hold me to that. I was a boy. I was a child. She said, your own feeling tells you you were not what you are. I am. He is changed. She has not. He says, have I ever sought relief? She says, in words, never. In what way then? And she says, in a changed nature, in an altered spirit, in another atmosphere of life, another hope as at its great end, in everything that made my love any worth or value in your sight, if it had ever been between us. Tell me, would you seek me out and try to win me now? Ah, no. He seemed to yield to the justice of this supposition in spite of himself, but he said with a struggle, you think not? But boy, that silence is everything. And if you have to think so long before you make an answer to, would you take me today? If you just met me today, if he takes a while to answer, the answer is probably not. At the end, she says, I release you with a full heart, full of love for the man that you once were. Ugh. She loved who he was, and because of her love for that man, she lets him go. He was about to speak, but with her head turned from him, she resumed, She says, "You may, at the memory of what is past, half makes me hope you will have pain in this. A very, very brief time. And you will dismiss the recollection of it gladly as an unprofitable dream from which it happened well that you awoke. May you be happy in the life you have chosen." I think there might be a little bit of spite there. She says, "May you be happy in the life that you have chosen." But she says, "I'm just an unprofitable dream, and pretty soon you'll forget all about me." Now, I do not for one minute think that Scrooge forgot all about her. You can look at the man that he became. Of course he did not forget all about her. "Spirit," says Scrooge, "show me no more." He doesn't want to see any more. He's like, "Don't torture me. Don't torture me." And then what comes next is a scene that almost never makes it into the movie depictions. And I think it's just the most fascinating look into Scrooge ever. He's saying, "No more, no more. I don't wish to see it." But the relentless ghost pinioned him in both his arms and forced him to observe what happened next. This is the first time we see the spirit force Scrooge. Okay, before it was, "Touch my hand, let me touch your heart, come with me and let's go." And now he's being forceful. He's like, "No, you're going to look at this." And they were in another scene and place, a room not very large or handsome, but full of comfort. Near to the winter fire sat a beautiful young girl, so like that last that Scrooge believed it was the same until he saw her, now a comely matron, sitting opposite her daughter. Scrooge has been taken to Belle's home, where Belle is sitting with Belle is sitting with her daughter, who looks so much like Belle in her youth. What's fascinating about this scene, it's the only scene from his visit in the past where Scrooge himself does not appear, because of course he's not a part of this, but this is still the past, and you'll see why in just a minute. This is not a modern day. He sees this big, happy family, and I'm not going to read the entire paragraph description of it. But it's just this, you know, chaos of children, and there's a baby crying. So Belle cannot be very old. She still has a young baby, and they're sort of crawling all over her. Now, what's important here, and we're going to see this in just a few minutes, I'm just going to talk about it now so that it all just sort of makes sense. What we're seeing here is the night that Marley died, or something very close to the time that Marley dies. So this was about seven. This was 7 years ago. It was 7 years ago to the night that Marley died. So I'm thinking, you know, Belle has a young child. Only 7 years has passed. You know, we think of Scrooge as being this wizened old man, and he could very well be in his mid 40s, you know, he just didn't age well because he's a covetous old sinner. At any rate, it's this chaotic family scene. The children are crawling all over the mother, who is Belle. It's loving, it's warm, it's wild. And Scrooge has this thought to himself. He says, "What I would not have given to one of them, you know, what to one of those children, though I never could have been so rude. No, I wouldn't for the wealth of all the world have crushed that braided hair and torn it down. And for the precious little shoe, I wouldn't have plucked it off. God bless my soul to save my life. As to measuring her waist in sport as they did, bold young brood, I couldn't have done it." They're playing this game, and they're kind of like teasing their mother, the way I see it, teasing her about how big around her waist has gotten. And then there's this moment. He says, "I should have expected my arm to have grown round it for a punishment and never come straight again." He's thinking, I would have liked my arm to have wrapped around that waist and never have unwrapped itself. He goes on, and yet I should have dearly liked Ione to have touched her lips, to have questioned her that she might have opened them, to have looked upon the lashes of her downcast eyes and never raised a blush, to have let loose waves of hair, an inch of which would be a keepsake beyond price. In short, I should have liked, I do confess, to have had the lightest license of a child, and yet to have been man enough to know its value. My note here is just mercy. You never think of Ebenezer Scrooge as a great romantic hero. But I think he said, I would have liked to have kissed her lips. He may have never kissed her in their whole time of courtship, if it was a very proper courtship. He certainly never did. He wants to look at her lashes and not raise a blush, to be able to look at her and not have her get all flustered and blushy and, ooh, Ebenezer, to look at her and have her look back at him with this understanding between them. He wants to take her hair down and let it loose. And then when he says, when he looks at these children who can touch her and hug her and hold her, he says, oh, I would love to be able to do that, but not as a child, the way a man would. To have been man enough to know its value. And oh my goodness, that moment. To think that he let all of that go. That could have been his life. And then that's when we find out Belle's husband comes home, comes through the door laden with Christmas presents and, ho, ho, ho. How was your day, dear? And he tells her, he says, you'll never guess. I saw an old friend of yours today. And she says, who was it? And he says, guess. She says, how can I tell? I don't know. And then she added in the same breath, laughing as he laughed, Mr. Scrooge. Of a whole city full of people, I find it so interesting that his name immediately comes to her, which kind of makes me think that maybe she's never forgotten him either, after all these years. But he confirms that, yes, Mr. Scrooge, it was. I passed his office window. It was not shut up, and he had his candle inside. I could scarcely help seeing him. His partner lies upon the point of death, I hear, and here he sat alone, quite alone in the world, I do believe. So the first time we see Scrooge in the past, he's quite alone, that little boy reading. And the last mention of him, he's quite alone, while Marley is off dying. And the two bookends of him, he's alone at the beginning, he's alone at the end. And it's this mention of Marley that breaks Scrooge down. Spirit, said Scrooge in a voice of in a broken voice, remove me from this place. Here it's just too much. He is broken. We can think maybe that Marley's death was really the death of Scrooge. We talked about that in the first episode, that Scrooge might be alive, but he's pretty much as dead inside as Marley is on the outside. And the ghost says, hey, I told you these are shadows of things that have been, that they are what they are. Do not blame me. And Scrooge says, remove me. I cannot bear it. And he leave me, take me back, haunt me no longer. And there they have this physical struggle again. And in that physical struggle, he takes the cap and he presses it down on the head of the spirit. Says the spirit dropped beneath it so that the extinguisher covered his whole form. Though Scrooge pressed down on it with all his force, he could not hide the light which streamed from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. He cannot take this confrontation that he has. with his past. But while the other scenes might have been sad, oh poor sad lonely boy, or bittersweet, oh Fezziwig's parties were so much fun and now we don't get to go. In that last scene, he got to see the consequences of his choice. The fact that he chose the path that he did instead of choosing a life with Belle means he doesn't get to have the nice house full of children on Christmas Eve. And so, were he just to know that he was going to end up alone working the night that Marley died, that's one thing. But to see what could have been, oh, can you imagine if we ever had a chance to see what could have been? For the most part, I like to think that if I saw what could have been, I would be so glad for the choices that I made. But that's not the case for Scrooge. He chose this life and it had dire, dire consequences. And the more he tries to squash out that light and that realization that came from the ghost of Christmas past, he can't. He tries, but there's a trickle of light that streams out. And it's that trickle of light that's going to bring about his reclamation.